Welcome to Fast Forward, a show that features conversations with people doing the work and being thought leaders in Minnesota's philanthropic community. I'm Levi Weinhagen, Communications and Media Specialist at the Minnesota Council on Foundations. This episode features my conversation with Carolyn Link, the Executive Director of the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation. For more episodes of Fast Forward, and more information about all the other programs we offer at the Minnesota Council on Foundations, go to mcf.org. But for now, here is my conversation with Carolyn. So I'm talking today with Carolyn Link, who is the Executive Director for the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation. Carolyn, there's any number of things I could ask you about, but I know there's been some changes for you with the grant proposal review process. So that's sort of a specific area I was hoping to get a little information about. What you guys are working on and what you're doing in that space, if that works for you.
Great. This is great timing because we are literally in the middle of a grant review process. This morning I was reading proposals, and this afternoon I will keep reading proposals after you and I talk. So this is great timing.
It's really, really right in
it
your head.
It is top of mind, yes.
Well, I appreciate you giving me a little time in between there to actually get into it. So I think the big question, one of the big questions is what led to this kind of change? What made you decide that a change was needed, and then what did you do once you just realized that there was some room for change?
Sure. For starters, let me just sort of frame things up.
Please,
We are, at the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation, we fund in the arena of social and economic determinants of health. So we fund statewide, we fund in the areas of education, employment, income, family and social support, and community safety. So these are the issues that exist in communities, and they're really interconnected. It's, you know,
and they touch everyone, too.
Exactly. And it's individuals and families and communities experience many of these issues together. It's not common that there's a family who or a community that only has a early education challenge or only has a employment challenge, right? These things are deeply interconnected in communities. And so one of the changes we made about a year ago was that instead of issuing RFPs, requests for proposals, on an issue-specific basis, sort of one at a time, over the last year we've moved to a more interconnected grant-making process to reflect the way we think things really happen in communities. So instead of just inviting proposals around quality early education or just around family social support, we put out the entire opportunity, all of our issues that we fund, all together in a funding guideline and invited proposals, because many of the nonprofits that we support work on multiple issues because they're trying to lift up and support families and communities in many different ways. So we're trying to be both strategic and responsive. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a false choice when people talk about you could be one or the other. So we're trying to do both. Respond to the way things really are in communities and what we hear from nonprofits, and be really clear about what we're trying to help people and communities achieve.
So one of the things I take out of that description, and thank you for framing it that way, is you're trying to sort of recontextualize when often things are pulled out of context because it can be so thorny to try and feel like you're making any progress if you have this huge ball of challenges that you're trying to always consider when you're using the resources of a foundation to address. So I'm curious, as you add those together and you try to make sure that you're looking at them in a holistic way and being aware that there's not one separate issue, but there's multiple issues and they're all bumping up against each other all the time, how do you make sure you're still able to have benchmarks and goals and measurable results for what you're doing without going back to separating everything out just because it's more straightforward?
Right. I mean, that's you're hitting the challenge right on. It's certainly tidier and easier to measure if you do things one issue at a time. The categories are really much clearer. It's easier to focus. It's easier to measure. But again, we're trying to align more with how we understand things really work for nonprofits and the communities they serve. And that said, a really practical application of it is that when we put the current funding opportunity together, we try to be very clear up front and say, these are the issues that we fund in, those five social and economic determinants of health. Here are the community conditions we're interested in helping nonprofits help their communities achieve. and then saying, essentially, you tell us what you know, if you are working in one or more of those social and economic issues, tell us what your community need is, how the people who are most impacted are involved in the decision making, and what you propose to do. And importantly, how you're going to measure that. And we try to keep an eye on what we think of as the community indicators. So what are the levels of kindergarten readiness if we're funding in the area of early childhood education? We've done quite a bit of funding in access to insurance coverage. What is the current uninsurance rate and so on? So we're always looking at what those indicators are at the community level that the nonprofits we support and their communities are working toward.
In making those changes, some of that is to make it so maybe the door's a little more open for people to work with you and work on some of these issues. But I imagine there may have been some challenges that came from the nonprofits you already had a really robust relationship with. Is there some degree of helping them navigate a change in the way they've been doing things in their relationship to your work?
I think what one of the things we're seeing is that the door has certainly opened further to some new relationships, new nonprofits that we hadn't worked with before. And I would say because we are literally, again, in the middle of a grant review process, we'll see. Many of the nonprofits we've been working with for years, this is the work they do. So it's not a change in direction. There's no sort of right angle turn that says, oh, we used to do this, now we do that. It's more of a how. Mm-hmm. What's the funding approach, not the what, is what's changed. The one change that is different about this current funding opportunity is that we are trying something different this time in terms of eligibility. And there are two specific kinds of organizational eligibility that we have for this funding round. One is that organizations that are led by and serving people of color are eligible to apply, and or organizations that are led by and serving people in the Minnesota counties that rank the lowest on the county health rankings. So that, it's a little complicated, and that's new. Those were interests and priorities for us, but for this current grant round, it is specific eligibility. And so that introduced new processes. We ask all of our applicants in this current funding round to complete something that we're calling the leadership demographic form. So if you are a nonprofit applicant, you tell us, we don't define for you, but you tell us about the racial and ethnic and geographic makeup of your board and executive staff. So that what we're trying to do is get the funding closest to the people who are most impacted by these social and economic issues, again, the employment and income and education and so on. And I think that's one of the great opportunities we have as foundations, and something that we're able to do at the Blue Cross Foundation is to really put these ideas very practically put them to work, right? Everybody, there's a lot of discussion about getting closest to and putting the decision-making power into the hands of people who are most affected by many of these issues. And with this funding opportunity, we really have an opportunity to do that.
Can you talk a little bit about how you came to those as the sort of key eligibility points in that, making that? Because I'm sure that meant some folks were no longer eligible and opening up the door to some other folks.
That's right.
So what did the process look like from the point of the idea being pitched, the conversations, the meeting with external stakeholders? How did that all look?
Well, one of the starting places is conversation with our board. We have a really terrific board of directors at the Blue Cross Foundation. Half of the directors are Blue Cross officers or executives. Half of the membership are external community leaders. And both of those groups are deeply committed to the work, deeply involved in their communities. So something, a big opportunity like this, and change in eligibility is something we talked a lot with our board, number one. And it also comes from our understanding and talking with nonprofits about what the data tells us, right? I mean, I think there's pretty high level awareness in the community that Minnesota has terrific outcomes if you look at averages, but once you start breaking things down, they really differ by racial and ethnic populations and subgroups, and also often between metro and greater Minnesota.
Yeah, there's really broad disparities.
Right, there's really broad disparities and very persistent. And so again, we saw this opportunity to say, well, let's do this. Let's try with this funding opportunity to move from an interest or a priority to a real focus on it. And you're right that does two things. It opens the door to grantees that are nonprofits that we may not have had a previous relationship with. It also makes some ineligible, and I would be careful to say, you know, for this particular funding opportunity.
Right.
Not forever, not for everything. And it's been an interesting dialogue, both with people who are, or organizations that who see the new criteria and eligibility and say, finally, it really, it's great to see, you know, walking the talk about community engagement and getting the dollars closest to the people who are most impacted. And there are some that are really challenged by it too, if they're not eligible for this particular opportunity. We had one interesting bit of feedback from an organization that would not be eligible for this new funding opportunity, but they really saw it as an opportunity to flip a relationship that their partner, a small nonprofit led by people of color, would be the applicant organization who gets the grant, who also gets the indirect expense that is part of the allowable grant, and the mainstream organization is the subcontractor and the partner, instead of how they would have previously normally done it. And so it was an opportunity to kind of change up the relationship a little bit.
That seems like a really small change that can have a profound impact on sort of perceived relationship to the community, too.
Absolutely.
Kind of
absolutely. And we hear that from some smaller nonprofits all the time, that they're sort of there can be this perception that they're the afterthought or the second thought instead of the main relationship. And I think the being able to be the grant holder, to be the applicant organization, is an important role too. I mentioned the indirect or administrative expense. We allow up to 20% admin or indirect for our grants, and that can be really significant for a small organization.
So you've mentioned community things several times already, and I know that there are community reviewers in the process.
Right.
So I'd love to hear you talk about the role of a community reviewer in this grant process and the selection of those folks.
Sure.
Like, how do you come to find a community reviewer?
Yeah, the community reviewers are a really important part of our process. We have worked with community reviewers in some way, at some level, since I think about 2012 was our first experience with external reviewers. And last year, and the way it's playing out this year, is that there's a several stage review process. And the stage where what we call full review, where eligible applicants are brought forward to individual reviewers who then sit down as a team, that's where we involve our community reviewers. And so real specifically, the way it's working this year is that we have three staff from the foundation, me and two program officers, plus it's actually four community reviewers. And we each have a slate of applicants that we review. And we do that individually, and then we all come together and spend a day sorting through our reviews. So we do a quantitative review, we do a qualitative review, and then the most important part is sitting down and talking about the applicants and why we scored them, how we did, and comparing notes. And the job of that group is to make recommendations back to me and to our senior program officer about which applicants that team recommends go forward to site visits and to the next level of review. So it's not a final decision, but it's a really important recommendation. So the reason why we use community reviewers is that they really round us out as staff. We have a terrific staff, really, really smart, really connected, lots of great issue expertise as well as relational expertise, and there are limits, right? We're just three people. And so we invite in community reviewers to fill gaps in what we can do as staff. And some of that is geographic. We've invited in three of our reviewers are located in and serve Greater Minnesota. And that's a really, we're a statewide foundation, but we're located in the metro. So that's something we really...
Sort of a common challenge faced.
And this is a great way to round out our perspective. We had, in this round and in previous rounds with community reviewers, they might lend personal experience and or professional experience working with Native American communities, for example, or somebody who is not currently working in a small nonprofit, but has the experience of being an executive director of a small nonprofit. So things, again, that round out our team in terms of race and ethnicity and culture and geography and issue expertise. We also, I would say, as foundation staff, we all have experience serving as reviewers for other foundations, and that makes us better at what we do. I've reviewed grants for government entities, for very small community foundations, for all sorts of different size organizations, as have my colleagues. And every time we do that, we learn and bring that back to our own review process. So it's a really nice give and take in the community.
That feels like a really important piece that I wonder how often is thought about going and being a reviewer with other organizations, where your investment is different than when you're staff.
Right. It's actually one of my favorite. It's one of my favorite parts of the job at the foundation, and one of the things where I learn the most about other organizations. And you see how you just get a view into their process without having been so deeply into the weeds as you are with your own process.
Yeah.
So it's a great learning opportunity.
Can you speak a little bit about the reactions thus far? So you're in the middle of a cycle right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the reactions to announcing and telling the story of making this change, the actual change in the kind of applications mm-hmm. that you're seeing and the way you're going through them, how do you feel it's being accepted and perceived by the nonprofits that you're working with, the communities they serve, colleague foundations, and even internally within your own organization?
Sure. You know, I think it's going really well.
What if you just, it's horrible. Everyone's mad.
Yeah. You know, and I would say it feels like evolution to me. There's a real culture at the foundation, and it's from the board and on staff. There's a real culture of continuous improvement and learning, where every time we put out a funding opportunity and we have a response to it, and we hear from nonprofits, there are always things we learn, things we didn't anticipate, and we get to get better at it. And we're really committed to that. So, you know, last year, a year ago, when we put out this really interconnected funding opportunity with all of the social and economic determinants of health and our whole strategic plan, one of the great surprises was that we heard from nonprofits who were doing really important work in areas that were totally aligned with our strategic framework that we weren't involved in at all. And an example from, and this is from last year, and we'll see what happens this year, but from last year was that we talked in our RFP, in our funding opportunity, about working with nonprofits who are helping families achieve stable and thriving lives and equitable systems and all of these things. And never once in the funding guideline did we say the word homelessness. Yet we got probably a half dozen proposals around homeless youth, and several of which we ended up funding. And I think had we done a more traditional, narrowly defined funding opportunity, the door wouldn't have been open wide enough for those proposals to come in, and yet they were totally aligned with what we do and what we're investing in with nonprofits so they can support their communities. And so I don't know what'll happen this year, but that was a great learning experience for us.
It sort of sounds like I don't know what will happen is part of the point.
Yeah, I mean, I heard somebody describe this as being, you know, tight on the ends and loose in the middle, where we're very clear about eligibility and we're clear about outcomes and what we fund and, you know, what the issues are and why. But then putting that to the nonprofit community and saying, you tell us, you're the experts in community. How can we get from here to there? And hearing that response.
Yeah, it's another road.
Right. Love
that. Well, that's wonderful. Where can people go to find out more about this? Or if people want to connect with you and they have questions or they wanted to find out how they could make a change in their own organization, is there a best place for someone to go?
Well, a great one-stop shop for anything about the Blue Cross Foundation is our website. So if you Google Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation, you can get to our website. And we have a great e-newsletter there. On every page, there's a button to sign up for the e-newsletter. And that's really great because that's where you'll always find out about funding opportunities. If you want to, you know, see what's coming up next, we always promote it through the e-newsletter. And there's a bunch of great resources on the website, too, about the social and economic determinants of health, what they are, why they're important, the kinds of issues that we fund. And there's also some really great grantee stories where the grantees the nonprofits we've been privileged to support over the years. There are short descriptions of all of the organizations. There are longer stories of several of them. And that's a great place to go to find out more about the foundation.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for your time, Caroline. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.